Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by Ironman U, everysite.com, the coolest new technology around. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Our next guest, Mr. Jeremy Poincenot. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm great, Bob. How about you?
I am wonderful. So, Jeremy, growing up, what were the sports that you were into growing up?
I was an athlete my whole life. I loved everything. I loved baseball, basketball, soccer, golf. You name it, I was into it.
And what type of level were you? Competitive in terms of, you know, high school teams, college teams?
I played in Little League sports my whole life, played competitively and all that type of stuff, and then I played 3 years varsity golf in high school.
Okay.
And then after high school, could have maybe done D2 or D3 golf, but decided to go to D1, San Diego State, didn't pursue golf there, but that was my main sport growing up.
So, end of 2008, talk about what happened, because you're in college, you're a college sophomore.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
All of a sudden, did you notice that just vision in one eye just started to go?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was fall 2008. I was sophomore year. I was in the prime of my life. Everything was going great. And I remember I was walking around on campus, and I noticed I had to squint to read a sign. And
yeah.
I was 19 years old and thought, huh, never had to squint to read a sign before. I think I might need glasses. I had friends and fraternity brothers who had glasses and contacts. So, like, not a big deal. So I did what any other 19-year-old in college would do in that moment. I called my mom.
Exactly. And what did mom say?
I said, Mom, I think I need to see an optometrist. She said, great, I'll set up the appointment. I'll let you know when it is. And I saw the optometrist the day before Thanksgiving 2008, and everything was normal. He was running the routine tests. Everything was great. And then he had me cover my left eye. And when I did that to read the eye chart, I couldn't see anything on the eye chart.
So your right eye, you couldn't see anything.
Yeah, couldn't see the big E, couldn't see anything on the eye chart. I thought, huh, that's kind of bizarre. Maybe I'm going to need some thicker glasses than I thought.
Yeah. And then how long was it from then till when all of a sudden the second eye started going?
Yeah, it was 2 months. It went from perfect 20/20 vision and noticing I had to squint to 2 months later, I was where I am now. I'm legally blind with no central vision.
So when you went to the optometrist, and obviously when you start to lose a vision in the other eye,
yeah,
what was the diagnosis? Was this something that they had any? Have they seen it before?
Yeah, good question. It was a lot of misdiagnoses. They didn't know what was going on, and I had way more misdiagnoses than anyone who had a clue of what was going on. And I mean, I saw multiple different doctors, had so many different things misdiagnosed, and then. Finally, when it happened, or when I finally, basically, it was my mom who diagnosed me with it through research, finding this disorder, Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, or LHON. She found it online. It typically happens to men between 19 and 25. I was 19, and she says, this is what I think it is. She practically diagnosed me, and I finally went to see one doctor who was for 25 years, he was practicing, and he said in his 25 years of practice, he had only seen 5 people who had LHON.
So when something like this happens, like you said, 19 years old, college sophomore, life in front of you, all of a sudden, one day you're perfectly sighted, and the next day you're blind. I mean, in what level, what do you see now?
I have no central vision, so what I tell people is to put their hands directly in front of their face.
Yeah.
And to look around a little bit with their hands directly in front of their face. That's what my vision's like all the time. I have nothing in the middle, but I have the top, the sides, and the bottom. I have the peripheral vision.
Yeah.
So in talking with me, you would have no idea. Unless I tell you that I'm legally blind, you wouldn't know. But I'm unable to read without assistive technology, without zooming in and out to read things. I'm unable to drive, and I'm unable to distinguish faces now.
I'm imagining, obviously, a major change in your life. How did you adapt? How did you come out the other side of this where you just didn't sit at home and go, why me?
Bro, man, I did sit at home and thought, why me, for a while. I was depressed. I thought my life was over. I couldn't comprehend that this could happen at 19 years old. I thought I was a good kid growing up my whole life. I thought I was doing everything the right way and kind of was like, what did I do to deserve this? I kind of was like thinking back on the first 19 years of my life going, no, I thought I handled that situation well. I thought I was kind of this person. Like, what happened? And just couldn't comprehend it. And it was definitely, months and years of kind of going through the stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression. And then to finally reach acceptance, it was hard. It took a while. But for me, I think looking back on it, reflecting on it, I think it's all about having the three P's. I think we need to have perspective in life. We need to have a purpose. And we need to have things we're passionate about. And that was kind of looking back on it. I gained perspective by seeing other folks who had gone through similar situations or things that I, in my eyes, were worse, but thriving. And then the purpose, this disorder I have has no treatment and no cure. At first, that was horrible to hear, and I couldn't take that, couldn't fathom it. But then later on, I thought, if it doesn't have a treatment or a cure, well, that should give me a purpose to now do everything in my power to raise money and awareness to help find a cure. And then passion. Growing up, I was a golfer. My mom one day came to me and said, Jeremy, there's such thing as blind golf, and there's tournaments all over the world, and players play in these tournaments, and they have a great time. And I thought she was kidding.
Right.
I thought she was joking. She said there's blind golf tournaments, and there's the United States Blind Golf Association, and starts telling me about all these things. And I'm like, Mom, that's really cute. Like, you made me laugh. That's a good one. Like, I did not think she was serious. And then when I found out more and more about it, I was like, okay, that's my purpose. That's my passion. Excuse me. That's what I've always been passionate about. Let's find out how to pursue that.
And when we talk about blind golf, so do you have somebody with you who is sort of clubs you and says, okay, Jeremy, this is probably a 6-iron, and they sort of describe your lie and describe what you're looking with what you need to see in your mind's eye?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, just give me the yardage, and I'll club it from there, but I'll be like, okay, you tell me the yardage. And then I have a guide, someone who helps me on every shot, but, it's a guide, it's a coach, it's a caddy, someone who's done a lot of things, if you're wearing a lot of hats. In all competitive rounds, it's cool. It's my dad. My dad's my guide in all competitive rounds. And it's cool, especially because we played, growing up my whole life, we played together, my dad and I, when I could see.
Right.
He would play his ball, I would play my ball, and now in competitive blind golf tournaments, we're together, but we're playing my ball, and we get to share that experience together. And so he'll point in the direction I want to hit it. I'll imagine where he's pointing. And then I'll step over. I'll do like my routine. I'll step over the shot. And he'll say, go more right, go more left based on how my feet are lined up. And he says, okay, you're good. And I pull the trigger. And we do that the whole way through the round.
So the first time you went out to play as a blind athlete, how tough was that?
Yeah, really, really good question. Because the first time, what's funny is I lost my sight in the fall of 2008. My dad worked in the golf industry. And that Christmas, before I lost my sight, he made a set of irons for me to give me at Christmas. And that Christmas, he gifted them to me. And I was like, Dad, and this was before my mom even told me about blind golf. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? Like, these seem great. I'd love to hit them, but I'm blind now, Dad. I can't play golf. And he's like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, I had these made, and I didn't want to just, like, leave them in the garage or something. I wanted to show you that I had them for you. I'm like, that's so nice, but, man, that really hurts.
It's sort of a torture. Hey, here's, I got you this brand-new car.
exactly.
I already had it bought, so I think I thought I'd just give it to you.
That's exactly it. He was dangling something out on a string for me, and I'm like, really? No. that hurts, Dad. And it was tough. I mean, I totally see where he's coming from. He's trying to please me and say, hey, I thought about you. And I'm just like, Dad, like, I'm at a low point right now. And I'm getting a little, getting me lower. And that was definitely tough. And so one day we decided to go to the driving range. And, well, it's actually kind of funny. My parents, since I was going through this denial and this anger through this whole situation, they found like an area locally where you could go and purchase plates, and you go into a room and you just start throwing them against the walls and break them to kind of get your anger out.
Oh, so basically a way to go out and just get all that aggressive, all the anger, all the aggression out.
Exactly. Like go crazy on a hotel room, but you're not going to have to pay the hotel fee and all that, whatever. It's like, this is like made for that. You go do that. And they're like, maybe this would help Jeremy. And I was like, I'm a pretty laid back guy, but I was like, oh, maybe that sounds like, I mean, I can break some plates. And my little brother was like, oh, that sounds kind of fun. My little brother was like, I've come with, like, I've got my vision, but I'll go with you to help you throw some plates. And when that day we were going to do it, my dad's like, hey, how about we go to the driving range, hit some balls, and then we'll go do the plate thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Let's do that. And we took these new irons and these clubs to the driving range and said, let's go hit some balls. And I said, Dad, if I miss one, if I miss and swing and miss a shot, I'm done. Like, I'm just going to put the clubs back in the bag and I'll watch you guys hit the shot or, you know,
yeah,
pay attention while you hit them. But I'm not going to, if I miss, I'm done. And I didn't miss a single shot. And some of them I hit decently well from what it felt like. And I was
right.
Like, huh, that was somewhat enjoyable. That
yes.
In Tin Cup, Kevin Costner says, we all have a tuning fork in our body. And when we're playing golf, we'll have a shot where that tuning fork goes off.
Yes.
And I had that tuning fork go off, and I'm like, wow, this is taking me back a little bit to the competitive days, to the fun. Like, this is the sport I love, and I'm hitting some decent shots. I'm like, this is great. So we ended up getting back in the car, and my dad was like, okay, you're ready to go do the plate thing? And I said, no, I'm okay, Dad. I don't need to do that. I'm fine.
I can hit some more balls.
Yeah, I'm like, let's hit some. My little brother's like, well, why the heck did I come? I don't like golf. I came for the plate. So we did end up doing the whole plate thing. I've never done it, never ended up doing it ever. But I was like, yeah, let's go hit some more balls. Let's try to get back into this whole golf thing. And when we first went out to play a round, I think I shot 99. I broke 100 by one. And I wasn't happy because my expectation level obviously was where it was when I was a player when I could. To go from that to being legally blind and trying to expect to do anything remotely close to that was really tough. Managing expectation levels was really, really tough in the beginning.
Were you a scratch golfer?
I was a 3 handicap in high school.
Wow. But 90, and most people would kill to shoot a 99.
And definitely. But you know, most people would kill to do a lot of things. But when you're in that mindset of golf was my thing, and I know what I can shoot and things of that nature, it's a 99 is like, yeah, it's not bad, but I know what I used to be capable of.
You know, what's always interesting, when we first started Challenge Athletes Foundation, I remember talking to some of the wheelchair guys and asking them about the worst part about finding out that they were paralyzed. And they said the worst part was, here came mom and dad back into our lives. I'm 19, 20, 21, and I couldn't do stuff on my own. I had to depend on other people. Is that the toughest part for you?
You know, for the longest time in the beginning, it definitely was. Not being as independent. And back in those days, we didn't have Uber and Lyft and things like that. So to get rides, I would have to ask friends and family and things like that. So that was definitely difficult to not have the independence of driving. But, you know, like now, 7 years in, now 7+ years of being legally blind, I kind of find I do inspirational speaking now, and I talk about this, that I see that there's a beauty to interdependence now.
Yes.
That I noticed that I didn't have before. And that's where, you know, on the golf course, in these blind golf tournaments, I'm sharing this bond and this experience with my dad, and having that is, in my opinion, a lot more fun than if I was just an individual golfer. to share the experience and the victories, the highs, the lows with my dad and share that with a teammate is so much more rewarding. So to me, I think there's a beauty to interdependence now looking back on it, that it's like, you know, I get to share a lot more experiences with people that it's pretty fun to kind of have that to share with others. But whereas in the beginning, I think you're totally right. I was definitely more dependent when I didn't want to be. I wanted to be more independent at the time, and it was really tough. But 7 years in, I'm like, you know what? There's interdependence where on my own, I could be fine, and my dad could be fine doing his own thing. But man, when we're together, we're a formidable team, and we have a darn good time.
So your first tournament as a blind golfer, were you surprised at the level of competition?
Yeah. I was surprised. I went to a tournament in California, and I think I got beat by, like, the guy who won beat me by, like, 27 shots in a two-day tournament. I was like, whoa.
My God, yeah.
Okay, I got to practice. And it was cool to get the competitive juices flowing again. And, it definitely was a reality check of the quality of golf out there. I mean, these guys come to play for sure.
So in 2010, you win the BGA World Blind Golf Championship. Take me through that and how exciting that was, not just for you, but for you and your dad.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. That was actually our third tournament at that time. And, I was 20 years old. It was the 2010 International Blind Golf Association World Blind Golf Championship. 60 competitors from 14 different countries. And my dad and I were there. It was our first world. And we were like, let's have fun. Let's learn. Let's enjoy the experience. And after the 2 days of the tournament, we did that. It was great. And after that, I found out that we tied for the win out of the 60 competitors, and we were going to a playoff.
Wow. And,
yeah, I was like, okay, this is pretty amazing. Like, whatever happens, happens. Let's enjoy the experience. You know, this is our first of many world championships, so let's just do the best we can here. And to tie for the win and go to a playoff alone is a pretty extraordinary feat. So I was like, this is great. And have fun with the playoff. We went into it, enjoyed the playoff. We get to a chip shot where both myself and the guy from England who I was going against in the playoff, we both have a chip shot to the green. And my dad and I were prepping for the chip shot. He stands a little bit in front of me. That's what we'll do for these short shots in blind golf, or at least my dad and I'll have him stand in between me and the hole since I can't see the flag. I'll line up to his backside, and I say, okay, Dad, you're good. He moves out of the way. I hit the chip shot. Felt good. Came off the club nice. I was like, all right, that's going to be a close. That's going to end up to a close area to the hole, and it ends up rolling out, and I hear it make us like some type of a noise, and I turned to my right, and my dad yelled, it went in. And we chipped it in, and after that, I threw my hat up in the air, I caught it, I was on cloud nine. It was an unbelievable experience, and again, something that I wanted to be able to share with my dad.
So, what did you shoot in that final round?
We shot an 89 in the final round.
Wow. So within a year of your first round at 99, you had taken 10 strokes off.
Yeah, no, it was a competitive round in England with the wind howling. I would take an 89 every day there.
Yeah, and what is your best since?
In competitive round or just a for fun round?
Either or both.
A competitive round was an 81 in Canada in the 2012 World. And just a for fun round was a 74 at a par 72.
Oh, wow. Now, if you played with some of your buddies who you played with, when you were playing in high school, have some of your buddies come back around and go, wow, you play better now than you did then?
Actually, yeah, I have. They don't say I play better now than I did then. I was definitely a better player then, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't devote the time that I did in high school. We played 4 or 5 days a week. But, yeah, I mean, just love getting out there, love having fun, and I think just blind golf in general definitely intrigues people to say, well, how does he do it, and what, like, I think they're just, I mean, in my opinion, just hitting the shot amazes people that I'm able to make good contact, let alone get it out there in the fairway and then continue to shoot decent scores.
So you mentioned that you're doing motivational speaking, perspective, purpose, passion. Are you doing a lot of that? And what's your schedule look like for 16?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of it. I've been doing it professionally now for 2.5 years. And in 2015, I had 46 engagements, so it was a good year for.
Wow, like, good for you. Yeah,
thank you. It was a really fun year, and I'm looking to 16 being just as good a year, if not better. And then also trying to incorporate other things to the business, looking into writing a book and other things like that to kind of get more stuff in the picture for the business.
When you look back at the, you know, basically you were 19 and now you're in your late 20s, if you were going to give some suggestions to Jeremy then from Jeremy now, what would they be?
I think there's a really good C.S. Lewis quote that I've heard that says, "Hardship often prepares people." Hardship often prepares ordinary people for an extraordinary destiny.
Wow.
And when I hear that, the more and more I hear it now, I go, yeah, and I nod my head, and I think a lot of other challenge athletes out there, participating and receive grants out there, can definitely relate, or if they're early on like me, when I first lost my sight, I'd be like, I don't know about that. And it took years to really grasp it and understand it. But had I not lost my sight, the trajectory my life is on now and the life I'm living now at 26 years old is nowhere close to where I think it would have been had I kept my sight. And I think I'm on this extraordinary destiny that is, I got to pinch myself to say, wow, this is real life. This is pretty unbelievable and a lot of fun. And man, the more I can keep this perspective, purpose, and passion, and inspire others to live a purposeful life like that, then, you know, I'm really making a difference in the world that I don't think I would have had I kept my sight.
What's interesting is I just had my friend Tom Sullivan on the show not that long ago, who was a blind entertainer, and you know his story, the book he wrote, if you could see what I hear. And when he describes running on the beach and the different feel of, you know, 10 different types of sand and the, you know, all the different birds that he hears and the smell of bacon, do you find the other senses are more on edge because that you have lost sight?
Well, I'll tell you that you're a friend and I like you, so my normal answer for that would be what?
Yeah.
And I would have you repeat the question.
Yeah.
And then you say, have your other senses gotten better?
Yeah.
I really can't hear you. Can you say that again? the main doctor, it's actually the most common question I get. I think it's a really good question. And I think that my doctor who I see now, who's one of the top researchers for LHON, he said, you know, when people ask you that, say no. I mean, it's not like they get stupid. But what I've noticed is I think it's not a sense, but I've noticed my memory has gotten better. And I think for me, it's because I've lost the central vision. I've lost a little bit of one sense. I need to, you know, focus more on some of these other senses. And I need to focus more on memory on people's names. When did I, like, for some reason, when I met them and different experiences I've had with them, my memory has definitely gotten better, and it's something I've noticed. It's like, kind of weird. I don't know why I remember that. You know, I met you 5 years ago, but I specifically remember you saying this phrase, and it's different things like that. And I think if you're totally blind, like Tom, I think your senses are definitely better than mine are, being legally blind and, you know, still having some peripheral vision. But I definitely have noticed my memory has gotten better.
So when you're on a daily basis, do you need a cane? Do you need a dog? Do you always need somebody with you? Or can you, you know, get out of the house and do the things you need to do just because you have peripheral vision?
Yeah, my thing is that I can do anything anyone else can. I just, you know, have different accommodations or ways of doing them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, going to the grocery store. I live specifically across the street from a town center where I can walk and go to the grocery store. And for me, when I go to the grocery store, I walk and stand at the manager's desk waiting for a manager, and then I tell them that I'm legally blind. I'm looking for assistance to find some items.
Right.
And then I have someone help me go find these 7 items in my head, and I'll list them off. And Could I go get them on my own? Yes, absolutely. But I'm really into efficiency, so I say, hey, why not go for someone who knows this place, you know, like the back of their hand?
Yep.
Let's just find these seven items and we'll go quick. And so I do that. And, you know, with apps like Uber and Lyft, I can get anywhere at any time. When I have a speaking engagement, you know, in Wichita, Kansas, I had a speech out there. I was dropped off at the airport. I got to the plane with assistance, but was able to get that. Then I get to Wichita. Then I get to the hotel. I'm able to make whatever happen. I can have it be done. It just might take a little longer, or, you know, I got to pad my timing based on that. But I'm able to do anything anyone else can't, just in a different way.
Do you find that people are surprised because when they meet you for the first time at a cocktail party or something, they don't realize that you're sight impaired?
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel it's like I'm outed when I tell you that I'm legally blind. And it's not in a bad way by any means, but it's not a disability where you can see that I have this.
Right.
You don't look at me and know, because I don't use a cane. I don't have a guide dog. So for me, when you meet me, you have no idea that I'm visually impaired. And, you know, there are times where I'll have encounters where it's a quick encounter and I'm not going to bring it up. I don't wear a shirt that says, hi, I'm blind. So when I have a quick encounter, sometimes people won't know that I'm legally blind and it won't be brought up. But, you know, when it comes to, hey, what do you do for a living? I'm an inspirational speaker. Right. How old are you? I'm 26. What do you talk about?
Yeah.
Then I try to tell them the story and they go, oh, wow, okay, cool. And they just try to learn more. But there are times that it definitely, you know, once I say it, once I bring it up, then they know, because otherwise it's pretty unknown.
How important is it for you to, because obviously there's parents out there with sight impaired children. There's, I'm sure every time you speak, somebody comes up with, even if it's not being sight impaired, it's another challenge.
Absolutely.
How important is it for you to be there for these folks? I'm sure you hear from parents all the time that, you know, their son is 7, 8, 9 years old and facing a world of darkness.
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes back to perspective, purpose, and passion. And for me, it's when they hear my story and they come up, like you said, I definitely get folks at every talk where they tell me about their story or their children or their friend or their brother, sister, family member. And it's just finding something that they're passionate about, like I did blind golf. I, for so long, I lived to one day see again. When I lost my sight, I was like, every single day I would wake up and like, one day I'll see again. It's okay. One day everything will go back to normal. That's how I lived day to day, was hoping
right.
that it would get better. And now I'm at this point where I've reached acceptance where I say, you know what? I really don't care. I hope there's a cure one day so that my family members don't have to live in fear. But I'm doing just fine, and this is my new normal. And I'm very happy and content with it. And so people out there who are struggling with something, I say, you know, find something that you're passionate about. Find something that gives you purpose. And, you know, there's folks I've met who've gone through the same thing that I have and, you know, play beatball, competitive blind baseball, or, you know, swim or right. run or do different things like that, tandem cycling. I mean, there's so many things out there for anybody. And that's what I think is so amazing about the Challenge Athletes Foundation. My mom found CAF. I'm a San Diego native, so it being local is amazing. And again, one of those things, a pinch me moment that, wow, how we live so close to it. And this happened to me at 19 is pretty unbelievable again. And I mean, the support that I've received from CAF with a grant is what kind of gives me hope again now. And now, like before, when I looked forward to one day seeing again, now I look forward to my next tournament and I look forward to my next competition. And a lot of these wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for CAF and the grants that I've received. For instance, the last world championship was in Australia, and I wouldn't be able to go play and compete in Australia, but because and thanks to my CAF grant last year, my dad and I were able to go compete in that. And
wow.
It's CAF changes lives, and I'm one of the many athletes whose lives have definitely been changed because of the foundation. And it's a phenomenal organization that I'm proud to be a local of and like proud supporter, athlete, and friend to everybody who's a part of it and friend of it.
Love it. All right. Jeremy Poinsnow has been our guest. We are brought to you by Ironman U, by EverySight.com, RunCatalina.com, our Challenge Athlete Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep athletes in the game of life, and you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.